Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hi everyone, it's Jesse Green. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Great to have you here for another episode of the show. Now, my guest today is Tim Castle, and Tim is a 3-time, soon to be 4-time author. That's complete overachievement in my view, but Tim's books are phenomenal. We spoke about all of his books, but we started with a conversation about one of his books called Be the Lion. And really, Be the Lion is all about understanding who we are at our core, understanding our innate strengths, our innate abilities, and how to use those strengths and abilities for best effect. But we also spoke about discovering and uncovering latent strengths that we have and how to develop those so that we can achieve our future goals and how it's important that we shift our identity to be the person we need to be to achieve those future goals. We then transitioned to have a conversation about negotiation and decision making, and we spoke about how to make great decisions in complex and uncertain environments. We spoke about making decisions with incomplete information and how to use that strength of the lion, the courage of a lion, to make great decisions. We spoke about A-B decision making and how to recover if we make a boo-boo. And then we spoke about negotiation and really about how to move beyond win-win and how to ask for the things we really want in a negotiation and how to be aware of anchoring and how to use anchoring, but how to make sure that we're not being anchored against. So it's a really useful, practical conversation about all of those things. At the end, we spoke about sales and how to use momentum in sales, and Tim outlined his framework around that. And really what Tim presents, I believe, is a really comprehensive way of thinking about business and life. Whether it's negotiation, whether it's about decision making, whether it's about selling, it's all underpinned by knowing our strengths. It's all underpinned by being clear about our identity. And this whole body of work is really useful, I believe, to lead a rich and rewarding life in whatever facet of work or stage of life you're in. I think there's a lot in here that Tim shares that's going to be really practical and useful. Now, if you're the sort of person who's a business owner who wants to grow their practice and really whether that's earning more income or creating more free time in your life or just having more fulfillment from your practice, then I'm going to encourage you to come across to the Savvy Dentist group, because in that Facebook group, we talk all about the things required to be that lion, to be that person who can, you know, develop the business that they want. Whether, as I said, it's earning more money or having more free time or more fulfillment, it requires a mindset, it requires an identity, it requires skills and competencies. And in that Facebook group, we talk all about those things that are going to help you achieve your goals and your ambitions for your practice and indeed your life. So all you need to do is look for Savvy Dentist in Facebook, find the group there. And if you're a practice owner, come and join us. We'd love to welcome you there and continue that conversation. But for now, let's get on to our chat with Tim. Have a pen and paper handy because there's plenty of pearls of wisdom coming for you right now. Tim Castle, thank you so much for joining us here on the Savvy Dentist Podcast, all the way from Singapore. How's things in your neck of the woods, mate?
Thank you so much, Jesse. Things are great. It was an early start to the morning, just how I like it.
Well, here in Canberra, it is freezing. We're going through an Arctic blast in the southern or in eastern parts of Australia at the moment. So I certainly have weather envy at the moment for you. I'm looking at you, you're in a shirt. I've got about 6 layers on, and I'd kill for a little bit of warm weather at the moment, mate.
Yeah, I understand. It is pretty humid, though. People are complaining about how hot and humid it is, but you know, we shouldn't complain, really. You sold it in perfectly.
Very good. So Tim, you are the author of 3 books. You've got a 4th one out on the way. You've written books on negotiation. You've written a book called Be the Lion. You've got a book called the Art of Decision Making. That's a lot of writing. I feel completely inadequate having only done 1 book. You've got 3 and 4 on the way. How did you find your way into this world of authorship, being an adventurer, being a speaker? How did you find your way into this world?
Well, that's it. It was essentially an adventure, and it came up when I was living in Australia. I went on holiday with a friend who was a bit of an entrepreneur. He was an app developer. And we got talking one night on the balcony, and I wanted to give back. I wanted to make an impact with some of the experience that I was having. And so one of the best ways was to go on this adventure of writing a book. Now, that was an adventure because it is so much more of a journey than you realize when you go on that. It took me over 3.5 years to write the first book, and the mission was to get to the end of it. That was the goal. It wasn't to sell hundreds of thousands of copies. It wasn't to become a bestseller. And little did I know, when you start writing a book and you invest that much into your story, it also changes you and you start falling in love with the process. I'm sure, as you know, you wrote your book as well. And I absolutely love it, right? So writing has become part of my identity. And that has always left me, when I get to the end of a book, Jesse, there's another book waiting in my brain and I just can't help, I have to get it out. So Be the Lion came straight off the back of The Art of Negotiation. And that was almost like the gift that I wanted to give the world. That was the journey I'd just been on over the last 5 years, where I transformed from someone who didn't know where they were going, didn't have a purpose, but knew they were set for a life of more, knew they wanted to give more and do more with the skills that I had. And that book is how you create that pathway to success and you build a lifestyle around it. And then The Art of Decision came out the back of Be the Lion. So it all flows. And then, yes, you're right. The fourth one is on the way. But had a baby in between. So let's say that took a little bit longer as well, but not so clean.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, the thing I've always thought about writing is it forces a clarity of thinking and it allows you to distill your ideas. It allows you to really synthesize those. And I always found that it gave me the opportunity to stress test my ideas, things that you do intuitively. You go, is it just me that can do this, or is this, you know, relatable and translatable to others as well? But I wanted to start with Be the Lion because I think that there's some real thoughts around creating a life that's rich and meaningful, and it's a foundational piece of work, of course. So I wanted to talk a little bit about starting with purpose and, you know, meandering through life versus having intention around life, and why so many people find it hard to identify a purpose. Why do we get caught up in the day-to-day and feel like one day turns into another, which turns into a week and a month and a year, when sometimes, if I'm hearing you correctly, you've been able to be a bit more intentional around that and go, hang on, let me design this. Let me do this with an intention. What is it that stops people from getting intentional about their life?
I think at the moment, especially on Instagram and different social media channels, there's definitely this inborn expectation that you should have it all figured out. And that's thrust at us every single day. Mm. And in reality, it takes a lot of hard work. And I think people underestimate just how many days you need to journal in a row, how many times you need to repeat your goals to yourself, how clear and how much clarity you need to have over your big vision for your life. And that big vision, right? It has to be something that's going to inspire you. It can't just be, this is the mistake people make, is they do what they think they can achieve. They set a big vision that they think is possible, not what they actually want to achieve. And that's the first mistake, right? Because then it doesn't inspire you to stick with it, especially when time gets tough, right? And it will. The moment you go out to record that course or to start that business, you'll get splashed by the bus with the water. The dog will trip you up. Every single thing is going to come at you the moment you try to change your life in that way. And why is that? Because it all comes down to your habits or your paradigm, what's inside of you. And that is seeking comfort. And what you're doing isn't going to be comfortable. You're looking at this big vision and you're going to have to change a lot about you. You're going to have to invent a new model, a new way of life, because if you keep doing what you've been doing, you're going to get the same results. And so your want has to be bigger than your habits, your current habits. You have to be able to push through that. And so the first place, I think, is to start with what is your big vision for your life or a big goal for your life. And then you have to work backwards from there. Don't worry about how it's going to happen. Mm. That's the next mistake. People focus on, well, if I do this and then this and then this, it should all go to plan. It's not going to happen like that. You have to look at yourself and you have to change your identity from within. And you have to become the person that's already achieved the big thing that you want in the present. So you have to bring the future into the present. And that's pretty difficult for people to grasp.
Yeah, but it's really important, because I'm going to go back to your introduction. You said, my identity is now as a writer. So obviously you had that big vision for yourself that you're going to be an author, that you're going to become that person, and you became the person. And now, of course, three, nearly four books down the track, you're the author. I wanted to talk about the tyranny of how, because we do get caught up all how.
Yeah.
Most of the people listening to this podcast will be dentists, but there'll be a lot of people, as dentists, we're very linear, you know, type A personalities, you know, step by step by step by step. We like a process. But what I'm hearing you say is it's not quite as clean and as simple as that. There's a lot of internal work that goes on. It's not easy work to get through, but we've got to sit with it and wrestle our way through it. When you're sitting there and you're journaling, you're thinking, you know, I don't know about you, but I've been through that process as well, and I found it hard to land on clarity for a while. For people who might be having that same issue with finding clarity, mm-hmm. finding their purpose, identifying what that big vision is, and getting something that really resonates with them rather than the first thing that pops to their mind, what's your thoughts around persisting with that and sticking with it? And again, I don't want to ask the how question, but I'm going to ask the how question. How do you develop the patience with yourself to be able to do that?
Great question. I think if you're talking about type A type people, you have to first understand who you are at this current stage and your tendency to probably push for perfection. Yeah. You probably want, yeah,
do you know what I mean? You want 100%.
And get that certain outcome. And by golly, you're going to get it. And so when you don't get it, it's frustrating. Mm. And then you give up, or you wrestle with it. And then you build in this expectation or this cycle where you're just going round and round and round. And I have people come to me who want coaching, who want mentorship, who have been stuck for years, very, very successful people. Very successful in their field, amazing at what they do. And the trick that they're missing is just to let go of that expectation and to start falling in love with what they're doing. And notice when they start falling in love, because that's telling you something. It's always going to come from within. What are you doing when you let your mind go? What are you doing in your ideal world? You've got to put yourself in the place where you start touching the dream. So there will be something that you're gravitating towards. There will be someone that you're admiring, that gives you that buzz, that when you watch what they're doing in their life, you're like, hey, I want some of that. I could do with some of that.
Yeah.
But I'll do it when. And that's the next mistake. You go, I'll do it when this happens, or I do it when I get the money, or I do it when I build my business to this level. No, you've got to start doing it now and putting yourself in that position so that you start creating a different vibration inside. And again, if you're type A, this will all seem quite difficult and airy-fairy and probably laughable, because it isn't following a structured process. It's all got to come from your inner self. It's not looking at a result outside and then figuring out, oh, what do we do to make that result happen? It's come from within to begin with. And so you've got to get clear. One of the ways is visualization. So just by spending time visualizing what it is that you might want, you're going to start getting closer. Secondly, you've got to take action. So you'll start having anxiety, frustration. If you start taking inspired action, no matter if it doesn't work or not, you've got to be willing to fail. You've got to be willing to embarrass yourself, be humble enough to take the hit if it doesn't work out. And so by taking inspired action, you're going with the mindset of, look, I'm a white belt in this. I'm a learner. I'm not basing my self-esteem on winning all the time or the result all the time. I'm basing my self-esteem and my identity at this stage on the willingness to try, to try and figure this out. And that's probably the first change you need to do to get closer, is to let go of that perfection, let go of the idea that it's going to be easy, and just start feeling things out, trusting yourself and your intuition.
Dentists tend to be perfectionistic by nature. And if you're not perfectionistic by nature, you do become that over time. And the dentistry really hones that precision. And, you know, that serves dentists really well. Patients want their dentist to have that high attention to detail. What I find, though, is dentists self-flagellate when things don't go right. They're very self-critical. They tend to see fault before they see virtue. And it's because as healthcare workers, we're trained to look for things that aren't right. But what I really appreciate what you've just shared there is attaching your self-esteem to being in the arena, having a go, not attaching your self-esteem to the outcome. Because I know over the past, and, you know, before I kind of figured out a few things about myself and my life, is I'd be judging my success by external measures. Have I got this? Have I done that? Rather than who am I becoming in that process. And your book is called Be the Line. And I wanted to ask you, this is probably, maybe this sounds like a cheesy question, but what is it about lines that you admire? Because I'm assuming, and tell me if I'm misassuming or misunderstanding you, there's got to be some admiration for the incredible animal that a lion is for you to call a book Be the Lion. What is it about lions?
Oh, for sure. Like lions have been a symbol of courage and boldness for centuries, right? They're on flags, it goes way back in time. But for me, it also comes down to that strategic perspective. A lion is very strategic. It knows what its advantages are, right? So it's got really good eyesight. So it can hunt at night, for example. So it doesn't then go and try and hunt in the day all the time. It chills out. It goes and relaxes and does what, and then it hunts at night where it's going to be successful. So it plays to its advantages. And so if you're being the lion, you've also got this standard of excellence. Obviously, you're mm-hmm. king of the jungle, mm-hmm. but you've got to maintain that standard. It's always about continuous improvement. If you suddenly one day wake up and you think, you know, I want to be a mouse today, unfortunately, it holds you as a lion to that standard yes. that you're going to keep improving and that you are going to be king. When we think about being courageous and we think mm. about what's within courage, because like being persistent, right? You can break it down into other principles. It's about willpower. It's about perception. So something you just said, Jesse, was dentists tend to self-flagellate. They tend to look at what's bad. That's a perception issue, right? And so you've got to work on your perception. You've got to work on changing that, because if you do not change your attitude, you're literally, it's you versus you. And this is what everyone means when they talk about it's you against yourself. Yes, because you're putting a cap and a ceiling on you'll never get higher than that cap and that ceiling of what you believe you can do, your self limits. So a lion in this respect is courageous enough to be able to walk the other way, to be able to go in the direction of everyone else, to be able to play to their strengths, and to be able to be confident enough to look beyond what everything else is saying they should do. And so it's just like that when we work on our strengths, like perception, willpower, things like our intuition, trusting our intuition, developing that skill, not just understanding that we have it, but relying upon it.
So the process of discovering strengths, I mean, we all have our strengths. We all have our things that we're good at, our natural talents, our natural abilities. And of course, what I'm, again, really appreciating is you saying we're not trying to be something that we're not. We're just trying to capitalize on the strengths that we innately have and maximize those. I wanted to ask you, again, for some people who might be listening to this going, but Tim, I actually don't know what I'm good at. You know, I've spent so many years kind of doing what I'm doing. I've lost sight of that inner sense of self. You know, I'm not quite sure who I am. I'm not quite sure what I'm good at. Is there a process of self-discovery around that strength finding there?
Oh, for sure. Like you're going to have strengths that you have relied on to get you this far. I think that's the thing. You're going to have those strengths, but then you're going to have strengths as well with inside that need to be developed. And if you develop them, they're the ones that you'll fall in love with. So again, when you think about strengths, you need to become mentally prepared for action, because you've got to have a discipline in your brain to keep that negative voice out so that you can then go on that process of discovery. So I would say you've got to get a motto or some sort of value in system in place. So what is your values? Like, is it to leave an impact on the world? Is it to contribution? Is it a legacy? For me, it's to help other people achieve their big goals and become the best version of themselves. Mm-hmm. And my motto is believe it is possible. So when I've got that value, I can then go looking for my strengths, because my motto is believe it is possible. So I know that I'm talking about possibility. So if there's something there that I think might work, say it's going in to sell a new deal or go in to talk to a publisher or get on a TV show or all of these, I've got to follow it. It comes back to my values. And so I would say if you're wanting to discover new strengths, you've got to look at what you value in yourself, bring that in, and then start acting that way. Start becoming your values in a more congruent way, because when you get in congruence, you start to trust yourself. And then when you start to trust yourself, you'll be bolder in the actions you take, and you will be less judgmental. Let's face it. What's actually stopping you? It's the judgment of yourself, of I'll be embarrassed, I'll look silly, I don't know what to do. And that's where you're stopping. By trusting yourself and having that self-reliance and that self-love, you can do anything. Like, it doesn't really matter what you do. You've got to be willing to do that, right?
Yeah, 100%. And I guess that feeds into some of your other work around decision-making as well, because that's going to inform the decisions that you make. And you've got the book, of course, called The Art of Decision-Making. And when I first saw the title of the book, I'm thinking, like a whole book on decision-making, that's going to be a short book. But the more I thought about that, the more I thought, actually, no, that it's going to be, there's a lot in that. What constitutes a good decision?
My mind straight away goes to, I can sleep in the evening. Like, if I can go to sleep at night, I've made a good decision. If I can't and it's keeping me awake, I know there's something up. Mm. Right? It's good. Your body's going to tell you.
The reason I ask that is sometimes we get into this fear again of, do I jump left? Do I jump right? Do I decide to do this or this? And oftentimes there's that, you know, freeze in the middle of not making a decision at all. And I think people become afraid of making a poor decision, that they make no decision. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about the decision-making process. And again, it sounds very simplistic, very basic, but I also think if we start with some foundational pieces, it allows people to be more effective in their decision-making moving forward, you know, taking the courage of the lion into their decision-making process. And I wanted to ask you a bit about that process.
Yeah, I like that, Jesse. I love how you brought the lion in there as well, because the lion does underpin all of these things. If you want to be good at negotiation, sales, and decision-making, you've first got to change that self-identity. You've still got to step in and be the lion. So with decisions, I think if you're someone that's worrying, and like you said, not going to make a decision because you go round and round and round. You've got to de-risk it as much as possible. So successful entrepreneurs, they're not actually trying to take as much risk as possible. They're trying to take as much risk as possible with the downside capped. And so you've got to do the same thing. Think about it like this. Whatever, you've got to play it out, draw it out. So it's like an A-B diagram. If I do this, what will happen? And then if I do that, if it all goes wrong, how can I get as quickly as possible back to where I am right now? So you've got that safety net, right? So you're figuring out the way back to where you are currently. What's the worst case? What's the worst case that can happen? And how would I get back? Okay. And that's going to start to give you answers around what you need to do, like whether it's to have X amount in the bank, whether it's to have a partner that you're going into this investment with. And so the second thing then is to obviously, right, how can I make it work as well? So you start to then go, well, we've done this. How can I make this the most successful decision? And really just take a perspective that you probably wouldn't normally take, because remember, it's you're looking at it from your lens. So what I would say is you will have mentors or people that you admire. So why don't you put the decision in the middle of the table and move seats and look at it from the, whether it's, you know, Elon Musk, look at it from his eyes, look at it from someone else who admires eyes, look at it from Jesse Green's, like literally take it through that process and start to get those different perspective. That's called the six hats decision-making technique. And it's important. And why big consultancies do it is because you do need to look at it from different lenses, because you're probably reacting emotionally to it. And you're looking at the what if problem. What if this goes wrong? And that's where you go completely wrong. If you're using what if from a negative context, you're going to get more stressed out and anxious. And what you should be looking at it from is what now? What do I do now? And then you get to that. So what will I do now? And then you keep going with that process until you A, have all the lenses. So that's giving you different perspectives. So that's de-risking it, because it's uncovering information that you might not have seen. And you can look at it from a financial lens. You can look at it through a philosophical lens, through like your values lens, all these different lenses. And then you're also thinking about that decision as a mind map. When you know what you will do, if then decision making. So if this happens, I'll do this. If this happens, then I'll do this. You've already got a plan. It's really just following the plan then. And as you do that more and more, you'll trust yourself.
And I think that ties into making decisions with incomplete information, because let's face it. I mean, if everyone knew what the best decision was going to be, you'd just make the decision, right? You just kind of get on with it. I guess the challenge with decision making is incomplete or you know, uncertainty around the information that you've got. So what I'm hearing you say is if you go down that A-B path, that series of A and Bs, you identify the potential pitfalls or hazards, and you mitigate those risks. You think about how you can get back to your starting point as quickly as possible. A, you're going to make you're going to de-risk the situation. B, you're going to make a more informed choice. What I wanted to ask you is, we're on the, well, I want to say the tail end of COVID. You know, maybe that's the optimist in me talking. I hope we are. But we've been through 2 years of considerable uncertainty, and there's been a lot of decisions that have had to be made in that kind of, you know, that VUCA environment, you know, that volatile, uncertain, complex and ambiguous environment. Is there anything else you'd add to what you've said just to, or is it the same thing when you're talking about that complexity or uncertainty on a broad scale like we've just been through? Because I know some people are thinking, some people are genuinely scarred by what's been on over the last few years, and some people have adapted beautifully and managed fine, but others have really kind of taken a few psychological hits in that process as well.
I completely get it, yeah. I think now is the time for empathy more than ever. Like if you're in a business and you're selling or you're doing different things, you're making decisions, it's the empathetic sellers, the ability to understand what someone else is going through, right? That person might have been psychologically scarred, you as well. That's an advantage, right? That even if you have, right, you can relate to others in a different way now because you've been through it, and that is your strength, right? And everyone else who's a shark, who's going out there and trying to manipulate, trying to influence, they will go by the wayside, especially in these times. And I'd say don't make permanent decisions based on your emotions. That's the first thing. Yeah. You've got to outlast the emotion, get away from the emotion, and then make a decision. Never make it if you're in a negative headspace. Never make it. Always be making it from that place of calmness. And so meditation is obviously key. Like it works. There's a reason why these apps like Calm and Headspace have taken off. I've also got an app called Level Up, Elevate Your Life, and it's about integrating your habits into your life. And it's things like this, that these tools are there for a reason. And even if you're earning hundreds of millions of dollars, people that are doing that are still using these tools every day. It's not like you ever get to a place where you don't use the tools, or you're ever not feeling anxious, or you're never not feeling fearless. Like, it doesn't work like that. Even the top athletes, the most elite performers, all have self-doubt and fear, and fear making the wrong decisions, right? What they've trained themselves to do, which is what Be the Lion is overcome that and be able to perform. The reason why that then looks like they don't have any fear is because you're not seeing it, but it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Of course it does. Like, it's all there. That's human. And so it comes back to how you empathize with yourself and with others. Yeah. And then just that's what it's about.
I want to just shift gears for a second if we can, Tim, because I want to talk a bit about negotiation, which might seem like I'm kind of radically veering into another lane. But I do think that negotiation does require courage as well, and the courage to ask for what you want. Sometimes people feel a bit timid about asking for what they want or trying to negotiate what they want and all the rest of it. But again, I see the whole idea of courage and those lion qualities coming through and all the things that you talk about. So I think that, you know, it's a really good foundation, as we said. What does negotiation mean to you? And I guess trying to give people some ideas of where negotiation fits in their life, because sometimes, you know, when we think of negotiation, we think of The Apprentice with Donald Trump or whoever it is, you know, negotiating billion-dollar deals. But there's day-to-day negotiations we all experience, and I just want to talk a bit about that to make it real for everyone.
Yes. The biggest misconception with negotiation is that the media has portrayed is that you've got to be hostile, you've got to go in there, you've got to do a winner-takes-all mentality. But what we're really talking about is distributive negotiation. And that doesn't just mean win-win. Win-win is also a misconception, because that's about compromising. Negotiation is not about compromise. Negotiation is about putting the right deal on the table for yourself, and at the same time, allowing the other person to see why that's the best deal, because you have to build this muscle, and you have to be willing to be able to, like you said, ask for what you want in the right way, at the right personal level, because you've got to understand who you're dealing with. So, for example, if you're dealing with someone who's dominant, they're uber competitive, they're results focused. If you go in there and you're starting to talk, you want to be best friends with them, you want to wine and dine them, you think that's the wrong approach. What you've got to be talking about is their bottom line, how you're going to help them. You've got to listen to them. They want to be the star of the show, ultimately, versus an influencer type person. So this all comes from the DISC behavioral profile. That's what it comes from. And an influencer is going to want to be your best friend. They need wining and dining. And so when you start speaking their language, when you start a steadiness person, they want consistency, they're laid back. You cannot rush that decision-making process, or they're going to get flustered. They don't want that. And a compliance type person, which is someone who wants all the data, they want to be accurate. They love to dive into it. If you do not provide all the details in that deal, you've lost them. So understand firstly who you're dealing with, and then negotiate with them how they would want you to negotiate with them, not how you want to negotiate. Remember, it's not about you. Once you start doing that and you start making them feel at ease, right? So mirroring their body language, mirroring the last three words, getting them to speak more. So they start talking and then you're repeating back to them what they're saying. You're uncovering information. And the reason you're doing that is to help them, right? Because with that information, you get more details. You start to understand where they're coming from without making assumptions. It can be very easy in negotiations to make assumptions, and the assumptions lead to emotions. And when we think about the types of situations that might not be obvious, it's things like when you're negotiating for your child to get into a new school and there's no spaces. That's a negotiation. It's important. It's going to affect the rest of their future, right? It can be quite stressful, and you can project yourself into the future and go, my child deserves to be at the school. Why can't they get a space? And you can start bringing all of that future into negotiation and being quite hard about it, rather than having the right conversation in a way that's so understanding, yet is creating possibility, because it's going to come from that imagination, that creative tendency. Like, what about if you went in and you taught dentistry to the kids? Like, what about bring that in and start to maneuver that in, give them something that's not on the table that no one else can do. That's where you start to blow it over. Like, that's where you're bringing more to the table than was on the table before.
all the stuff you spoke about with Be the Line, knowing your strengths, all those sorts of things, it shows up in so many different ways, right?
Oh, completely. When you're clear on who you are as an individual and where you're going, decision-making becomes a lot easier. Why do you think the most successful people make decisions fast and change them slow? It's because they know what they want. They know where they're going. So it becomes so easy to say yes or no to that decision. Why do you think they're good at negotiation? It's because they are able to put themselves in the position of the other person, yet hold what the value is that they can bring, have that. And almost when you're an expert negotiator, you've got to assume that potentially the other person isn't. So it's your responsibility to make this a good negotiation. You've got to be able to think creatively for both parties to show the way, to lead the way. You've got to lead in that situation. And sometimes that isn't how we think. It's about letting the other person speak for a lot longer than you think. A lot longer. Like the top salespeople are the ones that they do 46% of the talking in a meeting and they listen 56%. The bottom salespeople, it's flipped.
Yeah.
They do 72% of the talking. They're doing 28% listening. And that the data shows you something.
It sure does. It sure does. It's about that understanding. I wanted to ask you about the optimum conditions for negotiation and whether there is such a thing as optimum conditions for negotiation to begin with. We've spoken about matching, you know, the style. So if you've got a D type, dominant type of person there, or, an I type or an S or a C, using the DISC profiling, negotiate in a way that is familiar with them and desirable for them. But what other conditions are conducive to effective negotiations?
For me, I think you've got to bring the energy. Everything comes down to, and this is only something I've learned after the books, right? This is extra stuff. This is where I'm going now. It's more around that connection. And you've got to match the frequency of the outcome you want. And if you're not there, you won't be responding in the right way. If you come in and you're like, if you're wanting to do $1 million deal or $10 million deal or whatever, you can't come in at a $50,000 energy. You've got to come in at the person that will be doing the $10 million deal. The other side is knowing what's already in your favor. Okay, so you've got to think it through. Don't just sit there, walk into it and expect it to be the best negotiation ever. Really dive into it and think about, again, if then decision making, so that you can operate on the fly. If they say this, I can say this. If they go here, I'm going to go here. If we talk about a number, don't just talk about one number. Present a range. These are really simple tips. Do it in a range, right? Gives you flexibility. Anchor to the top of your range. Start the bottom at where you really want to hit. So you're always going to win, right? You're always going to get the way you want. And you can overdo it, right? You can put the range that you present on, put on the table way above where you want. So that then that's an anchor to the top space. And then they come right back down. No, we can never do it at that level. But they're going to come in probably closer to where you actually wanted to go. And therefore, you've already set in your favor. Don't use standard numbers. Don't say, this is for sale for 500. Use even numbers, then mix it up a little bit. Put some other numbers in. Make sure you've thought it through, because that's going to show in your confidence. And what I mean by confidence is you're confident enough to have a space where you can hold their distrust, their unsureness, their anxieties, their frustrations, their emotions. You can hold that space for them and you not get emotionally rattled. And you can empathize with them. And when you do that, that's where you're going to have a conducive, good negotiation, because you're in control.
So many questions about that. So many good questions that come through my mind. And I wanted to ask you a bit about the anchoring piece, because I think, again, you mentioned that very quickly, but I think it's a really important concept. Can you just go into a little bit more depth about that anchoring piece? Because I think that there's some real power in what you've just shared there.
Again, it comes down to presenting a situation in the mind of the other person.
Yeah.
And so if you are anchoring, the first number or thing that you're saying has got to be, it is going to set the tone. It's going to set the bar. So I can go in and do it in jest. I've still anchored it. I can go in and say, it's clearly a negotiation. Okay, what are we looking for? Oh, I want this. And I can throw out a number or a situation in jest and still anchor. And still, well, we know this is, look, Barry, this is what we're aiming for. This is what I want to get. And they'd be like, they can understand it's a joke, but at the same time, I've anchored up there and it's out there now. And then what we can do is go, well, okay, cool. Let's work this through then. and then they can tell you. So anchoring is about, and that can be in anything, they can anchor on you as well, right? Phrases that they will use on you is, we've never done this before. This doesn't happen in the past. This isn't our policy. This is anchoring to the past. This is anchoring. It's not just numbers. It's not just ranges. It's be careful and understand anchoring, because it will be used on you. We've never done this before. This isn't usual. We can't do this. This isn't what clients usually ask for. These are the packages that we usually provide. This is the way it usually gets done. All of this language is anchoring. And so be careful with language, and you use it as well to understand when you're anchoring and when they're anchoring on you.
And if someone's trying to anchor on you, yeah, how do you be nimble enough to not fall into that pitfall?
I think as well, it's...
we'll just recognize it.
You've got to bring awareness. So everything is either awareness or ignorance. And again, what will trip you up is if you're too emotional in that conversation. You won't see it. It'll be so subtle that you won't realize that the anchor's already been dropped. You've got to basically radically move through that and create another scenario where the anchor wouldn't apply. And you're almost off track. So anchors will get used on you. And the way you deal with them is you stay calm, completely calm, and then you counter it with another question. You can't be answering their anchor. You don't bring attention to the way they normally do things or the like what they're saying. You ask them another question that then opens it up again. You want to keep trying to open up that dialogue and understand and get them talking, so that hopefully there's a place and there'll be a moment when you realize and they realize that this is a unique situation, that then that you're not just talking about a standard deal. This is going to go a different way. There's no other way. It's going to happen in a different way.
I really appreciate that. I want to ask you about the relationship between negotiation and sales. Now, your fourth book coming out is going to be all around sales. In dentistry, you know, I think the language is changing, thank goodness, because dentists are becoming more comfortable with the word sales. Traditionally, people have used case presentation, case acceptance, but, you know, it's sales, basically.
Sure.
I wanted to ask you a bit about what's coming up. Well, you know, what are you writing about? What are you talking about? I know that there's some resources we're going to be able to give out to our listeners in the show notes, so we'll link to that. But what sort of things are you thinking about when it comes to sales? And again, how does this tie into the line?
So the book is going to be potentially called It's All About My Framework for Momentum. So building the momentum sales person. So creating momentum, the ability to create momentum. And so momentum stands for mindset, opportunities, motivation, energy, nailing the pitch, time management, understanding, and more. And that is my momentum sales model. And what it really stems from is the fact that most people in sales will reach a plateau at some point, and they'll try every strategy under the book, and then they'll start panicking when they're not hitting their numbers or their targets, or in rough times like we're in now. This should be some of your most successful times if you know what you're doing. Can absolutely be, because some of the competition is going to disappear and are going to be panicking and going to be rubbing up clients the wrong way. And so the way that this links to Be the Lion is that you can never get what you think you can't have. So you can only get what you think you can have. So you have to believe you can get it to begin with. You have to change. If you don't fix that identity and you don't think that you're worthy of building that business or that money or that practice or whatever it is, you can do everything that I'm going to teach you, and it's going to not move the needle. It might move it temporarily, but you'll always come back to where you were. And I see this in salespeople all the time. They panic, they send out 1,000 emails, they expect to get stuff. The problem is they're just trying small strategies to fix a bigger problem. Yeah. And so once you understand how to create momentum in sales, you can take that anywhere. It doesn't matter if you're doing your own business. It doesn't matter if you then go into another business. You can start generating momentum from any business that you go into. And that is a radical change in confidence.
And I think, again, coming back to the line, it's about that self-identity. If I see myself as being a momentum-based salesperson and being able to apply these things to get the things that I'm achieving or I'm wanting to achieve, then that identity piece is going to be foundational. Then you layer on the skills on top of the identity piece, and then you've got that really good winning formula about identity and skills. So you've got that competency, confidence, and the identity piece that kind of goes with that all together. So it sounds like that they all tie in. Is that a fair assessment?
Correct. Definitely. It all ties together. And I'll leave you with two more things. Like, if you're wanting to quick start, get momentum, I do something called the 9 before 9 a.m. strategy. Okay. That's really reaching out to 9 prospects before 9 a.m., right? Every day. Yep. Right? Once you start creating that wave of momentum, you start becoming someone that expects a lot more from yourself. And so you hold yourself to that. That's quite hard to do, to generate 9 prospects that are qualified, that are target clients that you'd like to have before 9 a.m. every day. I guarantee you'll start seeing some more decent meetings go in the diary. And that's what we're about, right? Don't try and sell everything up front. It's nothing to do with, you're just trying to sell them on having a meeting with you, on getting that time in the diary. Then sell them on what you've got. And remember, you're not selling, you're just providing a solution to their problem. That's all you're doing. And if you provide the right solution, the money's going to be there. Don't worry about it. The money's already there. You've just got to fit the solution in.
I love that. And that comes back to, again, coming to your point earlier about DISC and all the rest of it. It's about knowing who you're talking to, understanding what they want out of that whole process. You know, again, this happens in dentistry all the time. I've never yet had a person come in, Tim, and said, "I'm so glad to be here for my filling," right? Said no one ever, right? Yeah, like no one wants a procedure in dentistry, but people want an outcome, and they want the outcome that they see the procedure is giving them. And so in dentistry, you know, what we talk about is, you know, focus on the outcome, not the procedure. And I think you're absolutely right. If you can understand what people are coming to you for, understanding they have a problem that needs to be solved and matching your solution to that problem, then the money's there.
I love my dentist, just to throw this in. I love my dentist, but the reason I love it is because, one, the experience is phenomenal from start to finish. The experience when I'm in, and I know that she's going to take care to be gentle when it's a root canal or all these things. Like, I just know that her main priority is aligned with what my main priority is, which is just don't make this a punish for me. Come on, let's do it in the... And so she can then recommend all the other stuff about teeth whitening and Invisalign and all these other things. And I'm open to it. Because she's met my main priority.
Yeah, which again comes back to knowing who's in front of you, which is awesome. Hey, Tim, you've been really generous with your time, mate, and I'm really conscious of the fact that, you know, I've kept you over, but I really want to say thank you for walking us through your huge amount of work and how it all ties together. And what I really like about it is it really does stem from that piece of being the lion and the self-identity, knowing your strengths, playing to those strengths, and then taking that into a variety of different arenas, whether it's decision-making, negotiation, sales. I can't wait to see book number 5. I'm just putting it out there. I know book number 4 is not quite there yet, but you said that out of every book comes another, so I'm looking forward to seeing what number 5 is. No pressure, but I'm really grateful to you for taking the time, mate. It's been really wonderful to talk to you.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Jesse Green. No, it's been a privilege and an honor to speak to you today. I've had such a good time. It's been a joy.
Thank you, mate.
I'll do it again any second.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.